Blog Talk Radio.
In the grand scheme of things, we never supposed to have. Born to lose.
Born to lose.
Built to win.
Built to win.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Let's get it in.
Let's get it in.
Look, we ain't supposed to never have nothing. We ain't supposed to never have. See that growth of my rhymes in. You see my focus ain't on now.
Now.
At the top is just us.
Right.
Let's get it. Okay, PIP is some guts you ain't on. T-Von C, but no kill me or more. We can't leave, but we love the law. Hold mine down and stay above what you on. On, I'm a peas in a fly. Scorpio freaks, quantity Gemini. I'ma need me a light. Riding through the cap, cap, skis on the mind. Though, I ain't on, but I wish I did. Each one made a you live on that joy, bad please on your head. Lost one last summer, living ain't fair. Brother, care, we forever here. Hate to see a smile, money everywhere. Dream killers out, I see them in the rear. Boy, put them in a song, put them in a prayer. Amen.
Amen.
Cause we ain't supposed to never had. Yeah. We ain't supposed to never.
Nah,
we ain't supposed to never had nothing. We ain't supposed to never had. See that growth in my lines then. See my focus ain't on them. Love. Yeah, focus is for law in here. I reckon your barbershop talked of this. Heavenly Father made a spirit of God. Help whoever at odds get the guidance quick. All we need Keisha,
yeah.
All we need Becky,
yeah.
All we need is God,
yeah.
And fed free fatty,
yeah.
But nobody lives strong, young pedal. He ain't make it in the league, so the streets wet him. Getting wet up on the corner in whatever weather. Before he see the jelly, he gonna see the devil. Been a week since he seen his mother. In 18 since he seen the other. I'ma pray for him. It's safe to say he got some pain within. It ain't for nothing that I can say to him. Cause my bank statement don't relate to him. Love.
So clean when I stepped on that scene. Pulled up at San Martin. You could ask them. Y'all seen when I can't do this. Paper tagging only better than it get. That was your dream. Hold up. Let me get a feel like Jackson. Hold up. I'm Philly.
Nah.
Hey, Wallace.
Yeah, what's the problem? I'm focused. I'm Kobe. I kill these. I ain't scared of these. Getting higher than Shaquille. Low nil field goal. Three centers. Yeah, me. To the broken with me. Got a mil plus interest. Me key living. Yeah.
When I was dead broke, just told me tell myself I'ma still be the shit. Tell my PO, she lock me up. I'ma do the time, come home and still be this rich. Still see the bricks, I'ma still be a bitch. Got these Rico, trying to kill me and shit. Hold up, trying to kill me and shit. Let me get the flow back, I was chilling it. We was killing them strips. Drop hands, no chilling. Ain't talking about wank, talking them things. 310, got a million in whip.
Oh, we're supposed to never have.
To the law, come get us. For the money and the commas. Yeah, but can't forget about us. Started from that bottom. Yeah, but now I got it, it's a problem.
What up, what up? This is your host, Big C, and welcome to another edition of Detroit Sports Rap. We had a wonderful week of sports since the last time we met. had some wonderful NBA action go down. We finally saw an exciting fight this weekend. We had some big news concerning Deflategate in the NFL. A lot of things really, really happening right now. We're going to dive into it. We also got some U of M and Michigan State news and notes from the B-ball, from the basketball court, as well as the gridiron. Some coming and goings for some guys, some transfers, and some new recruits. So we got a lot of information for you. My co-host, L. Diggity Dog, is going to join us a little bit later. We're going to jump right into it. We're going to talk about our Tigers, man. Our Tigers have been having a little rough time of it, and currently right now, coming off a bad inning where they're down 6-0. They are definitely still in the race. I'm not going to hit the panic button yet because, you know me. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to say anything until they get like 40 or 60 games. But there's definitely some areas where they definitely need to improve. Kyle Lobstein is currently starting. He just gave up 5 runs in the 3rd inning. They're currently down 6-0 to the Minnesota Twins. There's been a little bit of a power outage, if you will, with the lineup. And there's also been some pitching woes. We got Annabelle Sanchez who's struggling a little bit. Shane Green has been going through a few problems his last 2 starts, although his last start was a pretty good game, a 2-1 loss. Alfredo Simon is still doing his thing. David Price has kind of been up and down. He's suffering from a little bit of an injury, stepped on the bat. Had a little bit of a lower leg injury, and they pushed the start back a couple of days. So there's definitely some concern, especially amongst the starting pitching and in the bullpen. We already came into the season knowing that the bullpen was going to be a little bit of an issue. Jabba Taylor has blown a couple saves. And really, outside of Joakim Soria, we have no dependable relievers. So I see my cohort is on the line. L. Diggity Dog, how's it going, man? We're just talking about these Tigers, man. How your day going so far?
What's up, bro, man? Everything's going good, man. What's up, Detroit City? Just letting y'all know I'm here. And, you know, that's up. You know, we're having a good day so far. You know what I'm saying? Looking at these Tigers, which is pretty depressing. You know, I just cut the game on getting in the house. And this is ridiculous, man. We have an up-and-down lineup, up-and-down bullpen, up-and-down everything. They don't know if they want to be good or not.
Let me ask you this. I was talking about the pitching rotation. There's been a little bit of talk about possibly making a move. You know, we've got Annabelle Sanchez has been struggling a little bit. Price has been up and down. Simon has been solid. Green has kind of been – he started off kind of hot. He's had a couple rough outings, and I think he had a solid one the other night. But do you think the Tigers should possibly make a move to improve the rotation and or the bullpen, or should we just kind of – what we got, maybe wait on Bruce Rondon to continue to heal and Verlander to heal. So what's your take on that? Should we make a move or should we just wait for the in-house guys to kind of work it out and kind of see where we are?
Well, to be honest with you, I think you got to make a move. I'm hearing Verlander might not be ready to after the All-Star break. So who knows where we at, you know what I'm saying, right now within his division, because his division seems to be catching up with us. The talent we got on paper right now is not going to work, to be honest with you. I honestly think our best bet to make the playoffs is through a wild card. I don't think we got enough anything to make. I know it's not panic time right now. We shouldn't be panicking, but what I'm seeing right now is like we had a little consistency and then we just fell off. So I think we got to do something to shake it up. I mean, I know we don't want to panic because the season's very early. But in the same breath, though, I believe we got to do something. Our bullpen is the pitch, and that's being honest with you. I honestly think our pitchers are getting tired because we used them earlier, you know what I'm saying? Everybody had to go to the 8th inning and 9th inning because the bullpen wasn't that good. So we got to do something to strengthen the bullpen, possibly to get rid of one of these players or set them down for a minute to the minors, let them, you know, brush up on them, get their control and their velocity back, and bring somebody else in. The only problem is I don't want to give up that talent we acquired out in the outfield, though. That's the only problem.
Yeah, well, you know, to get something, you got to give something. That's why I'm kind of the belief that I'm going to wait right now. I think we have been pleasantly surprised by Alfredo Simon so far. Annabelle Sanchez has been up and down, but he's been, you know, pretty much a poster child for consistency since he's been here. So I'm not going to panic on him right now. David Price, same thing.
I'm missing someone. It said Simon, Green, Price, and oh, and then Lofstein is, you know, basically filling in. He's having a rough outing tonight. Pretty much done an amicable job for Verlander. I got to, you know, definitely check on Verlander. If it's going to be the All-Star break, we might need to bring in another arm. But right now, again, I'm going to go to my master. We're at game 33 for him. I know I've been saying 40, but, you know, we're in a tight race with Kansas City and Minnesota. Almost is a long season, so I may extend that to maybe a 55-60 game mark to kind of see where we're at. But right now I'm in a holding pattern because I know that we do have some talent on this team offensively. I don't want to give that up. And I know also that we have a few things down in the farm system. I don't want to give up the future stuff, you know what I'm saying, to try to win right now because we know that, you know, that hasn't always gone. I think we do have, you know, some talent to compete. Let's kind of see exactly where we are in 50, 60 games and then kind of make the move. But, you know, I think they definitely need to do something for the bullpen, though, because we knew coming in it was going to be a little bit of a challenge. Bruce Rondon hasn't made his way back from AAA. He was looking good early in spring training. He hasn't made his way back from AAA, so we expected him to have his arm. I haven't seen Albuquerque out there too much. And Jabba has been kind of, you know, giving it up and what we had to do to make it. We're a little light there. We may need a setup, man. Maybe somebody can come in and give us a couple of innings and maybe that eighth inning, man.
And that was the problem right there. Not to cut you off, but the setup, man, is something that our closer was supposed to be because we had Nathan. Nathan was supposed to be the eon of for our closer. He gets hurt, Tommy John surgery. Now our setup man becomes the closer. He's doing an excellent job. I take nothing away from him at all. But the problem is, it's like we're juggling too many pieces to a puzzle that right now we just don't have enough pieces to pull it to fit to make a complete puzzle. You know, and that's the problem that we have right now with the fight. They constantly do that. They constantly make moves. They constantly try to they deplete the farm system. They have that win now attitude, which is an excellent attitude to have. But right now, that's why we're in a situation we're in right now. We have nothing to develop. We have nothing to bring up to plug in and play and be successful on a day in day out level. So actually it's like the same problem with us as the Tigers is the same problem like I said with the Red Wings. We are a product, a victim of our own success. We made the playoffs and been successful, so we haven't got a good draft pick, and we haven't had nothing to actually bring in to develop to be, you know, to be successful right now.
Well, I hear you on that one. I think that, you know, the good team wants it. What sport it is, man. Good teams find talent wherever in the draft. So, I mean, you know, for one thing, and it's like we'll have to fall off to get more talented players. And I just don't want to fall to that thinking. There's been too many examples of teams. I mean, the Atlanta Braves made the playoffs for 20 straight years, won a couple World Series, and they never had a problem with talent. So just about what you do with it, you know, who you pick with your picks. Let's keep it moving, though. One last thing with the Tigers. Alex Avila was placed on the DL. They calling it a loose body in his knee, so he's having some knee issues again. They don't know if his surgery is going to be necessary. They don't know how long he's going to be out right now. But so far, McCann has done a pretty good job as his replacement. He's batting pretty well, and he's also being a solid defender back there. So we look for the developments on Alex Avila, and let you know any new developments dealing with
him. It was his time anyway. Alex Avila, it was time for him to get ready to play off of that. I'd say concussion problems and knee problems. Those are things that, you know, when you're catching, get the knee problems, that's that sign right there that it's time for him to go because he's breaking down. You know, catcher relies on staying down after squatted position for so long. So when the knee starts to go, he's out the door.
We'll see how it goes. Let's talk about this NBA, man. The NBA playoffs, man, this is one of the exciting playoffs, most exciting playoffs I've seen in a long, long time. We got all the series that surprisingly there was some dominance at the beginning of these series, but now surprisingly they're all pretty good series. You always got to, you know what I'm saying, question some things when you're talking about the the NBA, because we know things can be shaky, man. But let's talk about this Chicago and Cleveland series, man. Your boy LeBron, I know I've often given him a lot of grief for being a mercenary, man, for not being, you know, what I thought was a true leader or alpha dog or alpha male in terms of his leadership skills, man. But I got to give him some credit right now, man, for these guys to be as beat up as they are. Kevin Love is gone. Kyrie has been kind of banged up. J.R. Smith missed the first two games. He's kind of put this team on his back and willing this team to victory. And they currently hold a 3-2 edge over the Chicago Bulls right now, who we both thought were going to be able to beat them. Chicago themselves dealing with some injuries. Paul Gasol has been battling through an injury, missed the last game, which was key. 3-2 with two games to go, man. If LeBron and Cleveland can close these boys out, man, in game six, would you be willing to give, you know, San LeBron some props for being, you know, for growing a little bit and becoming a true blue leader of that team?
Yeah, I would. I mean, we already knew he was going to be the leader of the team. We already. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, but that was the NBA draft. I tell you, when you get the ball 3 out of 4 years in a row, you know what I'm saying? The first round pick. You know, you're going to college, that type of talent. You expect them to be this successful, to be honest with you. They needed somebody like LeBron to push him in that right direction. I mean, LeBron left the team down in Miami, and Miami didn't make the playoffs. You see what I'm saying? So that's let you know what I'm saying, what type of talent Cleveland had. You know, so him with this right now, I thought they was actually going to lose to Chicago because of the injuries and the suspension that happened earlier. But I'm very much impressed with LeBron. He's got that killer instinct. You know, he took over the game took the last shot two games ago. And then he took over this game right here and had a hell of a performance. So, you know what I'm saying? Biggest for LeBron, but he has a good surrounding cast. Even though they're young, but he has an excellent cast surrounding him right now. So he's, he doesn't have to take it, you know, do everything on his own. If they get past them, yeah, they'll beat the Hawks or the Wizards. You know what I'm saying? This is a team that will be in the championship right here. Team that wins this game, right, this is the series right here, is a team that will compete in the NBA Finals, you know what I'm saying, for the East.
Okay. Let's go to that Atlanta-Washington series where we've seen some buzzer beaters by Paul Pierce. Washington looked like they were going to run away with this series early on, but Atlanta's kind of clawed back, currently 2-2. They're currently playing game 5 right now in Atlanta. Atlanta's up 18-14. Atlanta was your earlier pick to I'll let you say it. I can't remember if you picked them to go to the Eastern Conference Finals or the actual Finals, but you were speaking very highly of them early on and during the season. Can they actually win this series? Can they come back against Washington and win this series? And if so, what's the chance of them beating Chicago or Cleveland?
Yeah, they can come back and win this series against Washington. I'm telling you, they have the more talented team. They're the better team on record, on paper. They just gotta, you know, they just gotta dig down and get their heads off their ass, to be honest with you. But yeah, you know what I'm saying. The Hawks, once they figure out, you know, and get that dog in them, yeah, they could beat Cleveland. They can't beat Chicago as well. But I'm telling you, the way Cleveland's playing right now, it's gonna be a bang. You're looking at a couple of series that's gonna go 7 games. I think both series, this game, this series, and next year's. Say it again.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
This is going 7 game series. So, like you said, this is an excellent, and I'm saying this for real. This is an excellent NBA playoffs. You know what I'm saying? The ratings is pretty good. And the thing is, you don't have some of them old teams up there. You got a lot of new teams that's doing it. And I think that's, you know, makes it a better series. You know what I'm saying? Because you got this young talent and more people getting exposure that, you know, that you never heard of before. So I'm loving it.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go ahead with Washington on this series. John Wall is back to playing. He's been injured the last couple games, missed the last couple games with his hand injury. I think he's back. He's not 100%, but I think with him, Bradley Beal, and the way Paul Pierce is playing, they have enough savvy to get it done over Atlanta, but it is going to be a tight series. Definitely, I think the Cleveland series possibly could go 7 games, but Chicago has got to really step up, man, and show that they really, really want it. There's so many things going on with Chicago, so much uncertainty. We don't know if Derrick Rose is 100%, you know. We don't know if Taj Gibson is going to be suspended after he was ejected for kicking one of the Cavaliers last game. We don't know Paul Gasol's health situation. So there's so much uncertainty. And then there's some problems within their organization. There's some problems, I guess, between communication between the coaching staff and management. There's been a lot of reports that, you know, Tom Thibodeau may be fired if this team does not win a championship. And I think he's done an excellent job, but there's definitely been some clashes between him and the GM. So, you know, there's questions about his job security. So, to me, Chicago has definitely had to step it up on the court and play up to what they're capable of playing. Joakim Noah, I've been kind of disappointed in him. Offensively, he's taken a step back. I know he's been kind of banged up with some injuries and things, but really his offensive game right now looks, I mean, below elementary school. I mean, I talk about my guy Drummond a lot offensively, you know what I mean, and his limitations, but this guy looks like he just cannot finish around the basket right now, and that's really, really hurting him. And because I think that Tom Thibodeau really, really puts such a big emphasis on defense, he wants him out there, but this guy's a liability offensively. I think they'll be better served playing Mirotić a little bit more. I think they'd be better served playing Taj Gibson a little bit more, but we don't know if he's going to be available. Let's go over to the West, where things are getting pretty interesting as well. Memphis has given pretty much Golden State everything they can handle. Looked pretty dominant in the first couple games in that series, and then Golden State has been able to even up the series 2-2 with a great shooting night the other night. To me, Golden State, I mean, this is like a contrast of two different styles. We got Golden State, who wants to get up and down and shoot the basketball. Then we got Memphis, who just wants to grind it out, play a half-court game, get it inside, and bang you out. And Z-Bo and Marc Gasol are doing a great job, and they're getting great defense on the perimeter by Mike Conley and Tony Allen. I was taking Golden State in this series, but I'm going to tell you, man, Memphis has showed me something, a bit of mental toughness that I don't really see over there in the West. I may be taking Memphis right now in this series, man. It's currently 2-2, so now they're basically a best of three. I might be going with Memphis over there, man. They've been consistent in defense and rebounding and toughness travel. Sometimes your shooting doesn't always travel that well. So I'm going to go with Memphis over there, man.
I'm going to tell you like this. I'm still staying with Golden State. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's my team. I picked in the beginning for being there. Matter of fact, I think this is a team that might win the whole damn thing. I'm picking to do it, even though Memphis matches up with them pretty good. I give you that. It's a battle of matchups, you know what I'm saying? Memphis is a grinding team. I like them, like you said. They beat you up, smack you down, step on your throat and do their thing. But I'll tell you right now, Golden State has everything, inside game, outside game, defense. They can run the court. They can sit back and play half court. They can sit back and press you. They do everything. You know what I'm saying? And they got a hell of a jump shooter. You know what I'm saying? They do everything over there. I'm going to stick with Golden State. I'm going to tell you right now, what level of play you want to they want to play. They can play in all levels. And I'm sticking with them, man. I'm not about to change my lineup. Y'all say I go back and forth too many times. I'm sticking with Golden State. You know what I'm saying? I was very highly impressed with them, and I'm going to stick with them.
Okay. All right. We're going to see. They play tonight, so we'll get a good glimpse of, you know, what's going to happen. Like I said, it's the best of three series now for those guys. Let's go on to L.A. Clippers and the Houston Rockets. The Clippers dispatched the San Antonio earlier. You told me that they were going to be a threat. They started off like gangbusters in this series. I really thought that Houston was going to give them a little bit more resistance than what they've given them. It wasn't until the last game when Mr. Harden had the triple-double. They cut the series to 3-2. I'm sorry, the deficit to 3-2. But what are the prospects for Houston in this series? And possibly what are the prospects for the Clippers in this series and going forward?
Say that again?
Hello? I said, what are the prospects? Yeah, I hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you now. Yeah, I hear you now. I'm going to tell it this, man.
This
is what I thought. I thought the Clippers would have been beat Houston already. Honestly, they prolonged the series. Houston, I told you before, they had their big man out for a while. You know, man, little Superman Junior over there, you know, Howard. And the thing is,
little
they
Superman
still had this Jalen Clay. Yeah, he's Superman Junior. He ain't Superman, man. Superman Junior. So my thing is, you know, they, you know, the continuity wasn't there. Like I said, they came back. They actually put up a nice little effort. I honestly thought this series was out, was done. I thought it was going to be like a 5-game series. You know, they extended the game. They just did it. They're inevitable. They're out of here after this game. Tomorrow, 10:30, you'll see the Clippers sitting back resting, getting ready to play, you know, the winner of the Golden State and to play Golden State, basically.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I wasn't so sold on the Clippers. That San Antonio win a lot, went a long distance for me. But I did think that it was hard picking between Houston and L.A. because, I mean, I think both teams are very talented, but I think both teams were kind of challenged. I shouldn't say challenged mentally. Mentally toughness. Their mental toughness was a little bit lacking. But I see, in my opinion, the Clippers really, really maturing. You know, they got a great leader in Chris Paul. They've added Austin Rivers to the mix. We're seeing solid play, even though he's not knocking the free throws down like he needs to by DeAndre Jordan. And we're seeing Blake Griffin take his game to a whole nother level. And I'm telling you, I think they will dispatch of Houston. I don't know if it's going to go 6 or 7 game. I'm a big Harden fan, so I know he's going to put up a tremendous effort. It's just about who's with him and who's going to carry the torch. Is it going to be Dwight Howard? Is it going to be some of the other guys that's kind of step up over there and kind of, you know, shoulder the burden that James Harden is carrying? But I'm going to tell you, if they get by Houston, which I think they will, they have a shot to really, really bang with Memphis because of Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. They got two bigs who can bang with those bigs, and they also have Chris Paul, who's a tremendous point guard, and Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers, guys who can really, really, really light it up from the perimeter, also get into the paint and create opportunities for other folks. So I like the Clippers. I'm going to hold off against predicting them as the representative of the West over there. But I do like them. I do think they have a shot of possibly getting to the finals, man. It's going to be interesting seeing, you know, the Eastern and Western Conference finals. I don't want to get ahead of myself because we still got some exciting games in front of us. Never know if it's going to be a game-winning shot, you know, needed to be knocked down like your boy LeBron and Paul Pierce did last weekend, Derrick Rose. So, exciting, man. And I know from time to time you said that the NBA is fixed and there's some extracurricular things going on. Do you still hold those feelings? Do you still think that this year, or this year just, you know, going down as a disappointable year?
I honestly think that this year they let them actually just play. You know what I'm saying? You know, I can't say the 16 this year. I think this year they just let them go ahead and get busy. You know, this is a year that, like I said, I'm not going to complain about the NBA. I'm going to say they finally got it right. You know, you've seen people get suspended that need to be suspended. You saw, you know what I'm saying, you actually saw them, you know, they letting them play ball, you know, whistles going one way, you know what I'm saying, and all that stuff. So, hey, I'm enjoying it. That's what I'm saying. This is actually enjoyment. This is not no conspiracy theory, nothing like this, even though my piss is not in it. But I can actually sit back and say I'm enjoying what I'm seeing right now in the NBA because it's not, you know, it doesn't seem like it's all, you know, fixed. You know, LeBron got him a couple of rings, and everybody else, you know, they don't have nobody else that's like the poster boy for NBA. They want to get a ring now, so we good.
Okay, let's keep it moving, man. Let's talk a little bit about some of our local two favorite colleges here at Michigan State and U of M. A lot of news right now out of the state school. Most importantly, though, Michigan State, I'm going to start Michigan State. A little more good news there. We got three recruits football-wise over the last 3 or 4 days. They're doing pretty good. 2 3-star guys out of Ohio. And they got a one guy who's near and dear to our heart. Well, not near and dear to our heart. Near and dear to our alma mater. 6'2", 195-pound safety / wide receiver, Dimitri Vance of Cass Tech, 4-star recruit, announced that he will be attending Michigan State University. So that's a big win for those guys in that 2016 class. He's an in-state recruit. That's always big. Michigan State also got a – go ahead.
Okay, yeah, my bad. They also got, you know how we talking about they might need some help in the wide receiver side, even though it's next year, but they got a 6'2", 180 wide receiver out of Cleveland, Ohio, Justin Lane, another 6'1", 203-pound wide receiver, Cameron Chambers from New Jersey. Those are 2 4-star recruits by ESPN. They got a quarterback to come in. He's a 3-star recruit from Ohio. They're winning the battle of Ohio right now, I see. They also got a committed, a 3-star recruit, cornerback, Austin Andrews, you know what I'm saying, from DeSalle High School out of Ohio. And they also got a linebacker, Joe, outside linebacker, 6'1", 215-pound, Joe Bashan out of Ohio. So they doing their job as far as recruiting, you know, Michigan and Ohio, because the next, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 recruits committed from Ohio right now.
They're doing big things in the state of Ohio, our little Midwest hotbed of talent. Also on the another note, wide receiver Andre Sims, who graduated this past weekend from Michigan State, has decided to play his fifth year at another university. Mm-hmm. He's going to be transferring. He's been a guy who's been around for a while but had a hard time breaking into the lineup. So he's going to go elsewhere for his fifth year and see if he can you know, getting on the field and maybe making a pressure for some pro scouts. On the basketball tip for Michigan State, bad news is Caleb Swanigan, a 5-star recruit we talked about a couple weeks ago, who I thought was going to give them a top 5 class, has decommitted. Don't know where he's going to go yet. There's been some rumblings that he might go to Cal and some rumblings that he might go to Purdue. So he's no longer
who
in
that?
The class.
What's his name?
Caleb Swanigan, the big fella, who was a 5-star guy, was committed 2 weeks ago, but had yet to sign his letter of intent. He's going to go somewhere else. Michigan State still, fans, don't fret. Still got a great class coming in. Still got a 5-star big man here. Deontay Davis, still got 2 4-star wing players coming in.
6'9", 210. Yep.
As well as a guy, Aaron Harris, who was transferred and was here last year. Going to be eligible to play. So they still got a strong class basketball tip. And I still expect them to be a strong contender for the national championship next year.
And they still got 2 6'5 shooting guards coming in as well. Mack McClain from Texas, Duncanville, Texas. He's a 4-star recruit. Kyle Atherin, he's a shooting guard as well. 6'5, 180 pounds. They got some B-20 boys. They like twins out there. He's from Ohio. That's another Ohio native we got. You know what I'm saying? He's a 4-star recruit. So we got some backing coming.
The ACC Big Ten basketball challenge matchups were announced. Michigan State will be hosting Louisville December the 2nd at Breslin. Basically, you know, Michigan State played Louisville in the Elite Eight, I should say, this past year. So they'll be matching up again on December 2nd at Breslin. On the U of M side of things, since we're talking basketball, I'll keep it right there for a second. Michigan will be playing at NC State on December 1st in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. So I think the Big Ten had lost the first 8 or 9 or 10 challenges to the ACC. Remember, the ACC was the most dominant conference out there? But so far, the Big Ten has won or tied the last 8 ACC Big Ten challenges. So this is one of those areas where I think it really, really behooves a conference to go out there and play the best sometimes in your area. I'm sorry, sometimes on your on your floor, sometimes on their floor, spread your brand, see what's going on, and close the gap. That's a classic example of that in basketball, where the Big Ten has definitely closed the gap on the ACC. Also, Michigan got a 5-star recruit, Tyus Battle, for 2016. He's a wing player, shooting guard, small forward guy who's expected to be the anchor of the class for 2016. It's a big, big start. And now we can go to some of the bad stuff for Michigan, and it starts a lot with the football.
Woo!
Blake Counts is transferring, starting cornerback, transferring from Michigan. He was a graduate player. He had to sit out 1 year. He's going to be leaving. He's a guy that's played a lot of football, and I think is an NFL player. Don't know really what the reason is why he's leaving, but he's going to be leaving playing his fifth year somewhere. Dennis Northfleet.
Carl, before you get started, okay, I got to ask one question for you because I know everybody's leaving. You got people getting suspended, people getting transferred, even somebody got caught with a DUI. My question is, do you think Jim Harbaugh's cleaning house saying that I ain't got no talent here? I'm, you know, he's weeding these cats out to recruit? Because that's what it looked like to me, because everybody should be jumping shit when you got an X-Men coach coming over there.
Well, in any time there's been a change at the top, there's always expected to be some changes within the roster, different style of play, different style of coaching, et cetera, et cetera. I count this as just going for a better opportunity. We don't know what the depth chart looks like right now, but we do know that at Stanford and in the NFL, Jim Harbaugh has a preference for bigger cornerbacks. So with that being said, they've recruited bigger guys. They have a couple bigger guys already there. Cornerback is a position that they've recruited extremely well and extremely heavy the last couple of years. So there's a lot of competition. He also had a fifth-year graduate assistant. I mean, I'm sorry, a graduate transfer from Stanford come in. So maybe there's some playing time issues. I don't know. But whenever there's a change at the top, I mean, you expect some type of some player movement. As far as Northfleet goes, I mean, he's a guy that I don't know if he's been suspended or kicked off the team, but the word with him is that there's some academic issues. There's reports. Well, they are reports. We can't confirm them or not. But there are reports that he has missed classes. It reports that he missed the final. It reports that he's been there for 4 years and he has 90 credits towards type of degree. With that being said, there's a lot of issues there. But the one thing that I think should be said, which Dale Harville, who's the coach at King, said, was that, hey, the key thing about it is this is not a Jim Harbaugh problem. This is a Brady Hoke problem. He's been there for 3 or 4 years under another coach. He was told initially that he wasn't good enough to play there, but then he decided to go there. This is a classic example of you having to go where the best fit is for you. If you want to go to a school, to go to school and then go to that school. If you want to go to a school and play, it may not be the school that you want to go to, but it's the school that allows you to play. You know what I'm saying? We all want to go to Michigan and Michigan State and these big-time schools, but there's also a reason why there's Saginaw Valleys and Grand Valleys and Minnesota's and Western Michigan's and all the other stuff, because there's tiers for everyone. And I thought he was a great athlete, great high school player. We've had this debate, well, not me and you, but some other folks have had this debate about, you know, could he be a tremendous college player? I thought that he could be a solid college player, but not at a big-time school. I mean, you talk about a guy who, in his fourth year, was conditioning and lifting and all that good stuff, is still 5'7", 175 pounds. He was a running back in college. I'm sorry, in high school. It's hard for me to see him playing running back consistently at Michigan, even though he may, and people say, well, he ran a 4.3 or he's super fast. Well, you know, that may be true. But it's just hard seeing somebody at that size play. We just saw Amir Abdullah, 5'9", 195 pounds. He put up some great numbers in college, fumbled 21 times, but he put up some great numbers in college, had some great ability in college. But at 5'9", 195, people were still questioning his size. So with Northfleet, I think there were definitely some questions about size. And to be honest with you, he's averaged 24 yards a return in terms of kickoff return. I don't know exactly where he is in terms of punts. He's done some fairly decent things in the return game, but to me, he just didn't really fit as a running back. He didn't really fit as a receiver. He got a late start for them at DB. So it's just tight, man. I think he probably should have went to a mid-major school and maybe, you know, got a chance to show him his ability a little bit more. But with him, I don't think it's a situation of Harbaugh cleaning house. I just think it's somebody who, you know, has 90 credits towards no degree
They're skipping classes and skipping finals. It's, what are we going to do with him? You know what I mean?
Yeah, he was up there just living the life.
You know what I mean? So that's a tough situation, but he's no longer there. You referred to it earlier, Harbaugh's number two guy, his sidekick, Jim Minnick, was, I guess, pulled over and arrested for a possible DUI. So he's been suspended indefinitely. A lot of bad press right now for the Wolverines. There are also four minor secondary infractions that were self-reported by Michigan. Nothing major. What I understand, there's not going to be any type of penalties or anything for these little minor infractions. But all these things kind of add up to be kind of bad publicity for Michigan right now, something that they probably really don't need. Nothing I think is going to be major. It's going to really, really affect them down the line. But that Blake Countess situation is one that I think we need to keep our eye on, because he was a very good performer, a second-team All-Big Ten performer a couple years ago. So, like I said, I know he's 5'10", 190 pounds. But he's went out there, he's played against big-time talent, made big-time plays. He's a big-time player. I'm really eager to see where he goes.
Right.
I think that's pretty much it on the – oh, I'm sorry. What about your thoughts? Your boy Chris Webber, I went on an interview and basically, I guess, had his first comments about the Fab Five documentary, and there were some questions about why he wasn't in it. And he said that
– we all know why he wasn't in it.
But he said part of the reason why he's not in it is that he's preparing to write a book to tell, I guess, his side of his version of the story. He also made some reference to one of the people, one of the Fab Five. He didn't want to say any names, maybe in negotiations with somebody to make sure that he was there. I don't know if there was a monetary situation for him to be there. And then he was asked to be in it, and he said, yeah, but he later declined. Jimmy King later came on to someone's show and refuted that. It definitely seems to be some type of rift between him and the other guys. I think it goes beyond the timeout. I think it goes beyond, you know, basically he got, I guess, Tom Brady, if you will, in terms of the Ed Martin scandal. It was kind of put on him. Lewis Bullock and Robert Traylor are taking the money. He was the one who, you know, had to be go to the grand jury because they said he perjured himself. So
yep.
I don't know if he's upset or what, but it's really funny about, you know, how these guys have, you know, grown up together, if you will, had great moments in time at the University of Michigan, but are kind of estranged right now.
My thing is this: he bought a lot of this on himself. You know what I'm saying? He took a lot of money. He blackballed a lot of people. He talked bad about the program as well. Don't forget that. So, you know, it's like when the program turned its back on him, you know, it's to the point, I don't know if it was him or Michigan that said, you're not allowed up in here no more. He wasn't allowed to win the games. I think it was Michigan. They didn't want him in one of the arenas. So that's what
everybody was banned. Everybody was banned for a while.
Okay. But, you know, so my thing is, you know, it wasn't like he was so acceptance of open arms to come back and talk to him. The documentary, you know, rubbed in the wrong way, and deserving so, but at the same time, he put himself out there. You know, he got it through the thing with Tractor Trailer. You know what I'm saying? He was one of those doing the money thing. I believe, wasn't they all in the car together when they got, he was in the car with them, correct?
When Trailer got to the accident.
McKean,
Cleese, I'm not sure. I'm not sure who was, I don't think he was in the car. I think it was someone else, but I think he was gone by then. I don't think he was in the crowd.
I know, but he was still trying to get people. I don't know what happened, but it was something that went off from that area that, you know, that I guess he thought that they rubbed it the wrong way, lied on him, something like that. He was just still hurt for a while. And, you know, for a while, when they was actually to come and talk to him, he wouldn't open up. You know how the media is. Once you turn your back on the media, they're going to take a negative everything on you no matter what you do. You know what I'm saying? So that's what happened with him.
I don't know, man. It's kind of funny. Him and Jalen were really close, and he kind of alluded that, you know, he didn't like the depiction that Jalen had of Jalen in the documentary. He was kind of, you know, I guess he said he was portrayed as like he was the leading scorer and he was the leader of the Fab Five. I'm like, well, you know, you're not there.
you didn't participate, and, you know, second in command pretty much was Jalen. Jalen had the persona, you know, Jalen had the swag at that point, and he was a pretty impressive player, him and Juwan Howard. So, I mean, but it's kind of funny that, you know, he would come out and say that. I'm eager to see what his book, what information his book provides, what insight it provides. But it's funny that he should say that, and I'm happy that the Fab Five have all kind of, you know, had, you know, pretty solid careers, whether it be in the NBA, whether it be over in Europe, et cetera, and they've been able, you know, to kind of, you know, still survive. They didn't get used up by the system. So, you know, kudos to the Fab Five. That's an interesting angle. That's pretty much all I have, really, on the Michigan State front. Did you have anything that you wanted to add? Or anything?
This is what I'm going to say about Michigan. It was time for an overhaul. And, you know, saying the way that program was headed, you know what I'm saying, they became a laughing stock. They became what the Dallas Cowboys was 3 years ago. I told you, irrelevant. You know what I'm saying? They just had their name. You know what I'm saying? So that's what Michigan had become. Hopefully with Jim Harbaugh there, you know what I'm saying, he can get this program. But I told you, I do cheer for Michigan. Only when they play against Michigan State. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to tell you that. My thing is, I want them to be successful. I want them to have recruits. I want them to consistently kick Ohio State ass. You know what I'm saying? Because that's such a, you know, they don't talk about the rivalry between Michigan State and Michigan. They talk about it between Michigan and Ohio State. And, you know, I want them to be a dominant team. And this right here is what it is. I think Harbaugh's going to clean it up, get this program back on point, and he's going to leave. You know what I'm saying? That's what he normally do. So I'm hoping that they, I was hoping that they'll go, like, 8-8 and whatever this year. Eight and three, eight and four. But it's so many people leaving, and such a big turnover. It's kind of hard to tell my predictions as far as in football. But they're on the right path, though. I give them that.
I'm gonna tell you like this: you can call them the Cowboys of 3 years ago, or you can call them the Michigan State of 10 years ago. Whichever one floats your boat. But as far as they go, really, Blake Counsell is the only guy who's left that is really, I mean, who was a player. Norfleet hasn't made an impact. I'm not really worried about him. And there's a bunch of players who, you know, are still there. And normally when a new coach comes in, there's attrition everywhere. There's 10 or 11 players that leave. There have been a couple players who have left, but those guys really weren't in the playing rotation anyway. There's been a number of strong classes that Brady Hoke have brought in. Those guys, for the most part, are still here. So I expect some good things from them. But, again, no, we still got an unproven quarterback, still got an unproven line. There's going to be some, you know, some growing pains. But we'll see how they work out. We got a long time to look at them and evaluate them. So we'll see how they go. But let's keep it moving. Real quickly, man, for those who didn't get to see a fight 2 weeks ago, a good fight between Mayweather and Pac-Man. Let's talk about this real briefly, this Canelo and Kirkland fight. I know it was a brief fight. It wasn't much to talk about, but for those three or four rounds, I'm going to tell you, man, it was very exciting, and it was a dominant performance, a gutsy performance by Kirkland, dominant performance by Canelo. What do you think about that fight, man? Have you had a chance to see the fight?
I have not got a chance to do that fight, man. I've been busy at work, but I have heard a lot of rumors about it.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you, one of the best knockouts I've seen in a very long time. So please take your time to see the fight. And when we get done with this show, or if you have a moment right now, if you can have a device, maybe look up on YouTube. You can check out
the highlights. I'll bring it up
right now. Put a tremendous hurting on that boy Kirkland. I'm telling you, I'm going to say this again. I'm not pro Pacquiao, not pro the rematch, but I am pro seeing a Canelo Alvarez, Miguel Cotto fight, possibly.
Cotto?
3 to 4 weeks from now. And I also would like the winner of that to possibly fight Floyd. Floyd came out and said that, you know, he's not. He says that your boy is crying, has been a sore loser, didn't come out here and give him the proper respect and say that he was the better man. So he's right. I don't even think I should give Pacquiao a rematch. And he's thinking that he may retire come September unless somebody really, really emerges after that September fight. as a real contender, man. But I'm going to tell you, Canelo Alvarez, Miguel Cotto, if those guys can put on an excellent show and show some improvement, they're going to be the bigger men. They're going to be known punchers, guys who can bring it to them. I'm not going to say they're going to beat them. I'm not going to pick anybody in this sport anymore. I'm out of that business. Mm-hmm. I'm out of that business. But I think that'll be a good fight, though, for those guys. And one that, you know, may not be as lucrative as that Pac-Man thing. That may be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. But definitely a lucrative fight for him. So,
I mean, yeah, he made $200 million off that, so it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, he said, yeah, he made a couple lives off that, a couple nice lives off that. Let's keep it moving, mm-hmm. man. Let's talk about the NFL. Let's talk briefly about our Detroit Lions, who are starting to make a few more moves. We were very frustrated with them when it came to the free agent.
Okay.
The free agent. The free agent signings. But we're starting, and I told you guys that, you know, I think they were kind of in shock a little bit when they lost Sue. I think they kind of made a conscious effort that we're going to try to get together financially. And we're also going to not try to offset our compensatory picks formula. So they know they're getting some pick. A pick for Sue. They know they're getting a pick for Fairley. Anybody picked up after May 12th would not count in that formula. So they've been kind of waiting. Now we see them go out and sign Lance Moore. We see them sign.
That's a nice pickup.
We see them also sign DB Chris Owens. Three guys who have NFL experience.
Okay, I've seen a knockout.
Three guys with NFL experience to add to this. Did you want to go back to that boxing real quick? I see you kind of excited about
just,
that.
Just real quick, man. Hey, have you ever heard of the term spunked around in the ring? He hit him with a knockout so hard, my man did a 360 and landed on his face, dog. That right there was total dominance. They just showed, what was it, third round? They showed him knock him down two times and then finish him off with a beautiful, what was it, left, right, oh, uppercut, right. Put him on his back, man. I'm going to tell you right now. That right there is impressive. That right there is impressive. What I just saw was something that I think, yeah, that right there earns you the price of admission from it right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay. We're going to let him get down there and let him play again. Let him get a good fight in. That's all I got to say. Now, if him and Cotto fight, and if he do that to him, and then, woohoo, damn, I have to look at that again. Carl? Yeah, that's all I got to say. And everybody out there listening, YouTube this right now, or go and look at this fight. Just look at the third round. He pieced him up something.
Don't leave the show, but when you get a chance after the show, definitely take a look in on that fight. It was definitely an impressive fight. But let me put the disclaimer out there already. Now Floyd has already fought Canelo Alvarez and made him look.
Well, we talked about it. Remember,
tremendously stupid.
We fought him too early. We said this boy is technical, and we said he fought for it too early. We said if you give him 2 or 3 years, remember, because me and you watched this fight together. I think it was me and you poking their minds over it. We said it. I said you give him like 2 or 3 more years, he's going to be something powerful for Floyd because I like his stalking, the way he used to stalk and come up the ring and everything else, his puncher power. This boy was special back then. I think that was his only loss was to Floyd. We said that. And I said if you give him a couple more years to develop, he's going to be a beast. And damn it, he had some years to develop, and this boy is a beast. He is a problem right now.
Let's get back to the Lions. They made a couple of signings, like I said, that aren't going to count against the compensatory pick formula. Nothing major. Lance Moore and Greg Solis, two wide receivers, were picked up. So we definitely see that they're trying to upgrade the wide receiver spot. That third receiver spot is the one I think that they're looking heavily at, trying to get somebody involved. Still no offensive linemen or no defensive linemen out there that we picked up as of yet. What do you think so far of the pickups? We talked about the draft last week. What do you think so far of the pickups for the Lions? And are these moves that can possibly improve the team, or are these just catch body moves, the ones we just spoke of?
When we picked up Lance Moore, I think that was an excellent pickup. I mean, this was Lance Moore. Me and my cousin was talking earlier about this. He's the type of receiver, okay? He's not blazing fast, okay? He runs Chris routes. Chris Rouse. He was in the Saints offense, so he knows the scheme and everything we're trying to run here. And like I said, he's somebody at Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh has got a lot of young talent around him and moved his ass off the field. Here, he'd be welcome as a third receiver, a good slot receiver that, like I said, would know the offense, know how to go across the middle. He has reliable hands. I think it's a good pickup, you know what I'm saying, because after, you know, our first two top receivers, what do we have? And if we're going to try to spread the ball out and do all this type of, you know, Saints offense like that we've been told that we're going to have the last couple of years, then, you know, this is a key component right here.
I agree. I like his talent. He's a guy who also can return punts and kickoffs if need be. He is a little bit older than two. He's 31 years old. Last year he didn't get caught up in the numbers game at Pittsburgh. Only 14 catches for 198 yards. But to your point, he is familiar with this offense. He's played in the slot and as well as outside. He knows the offense. He's been a solid professional. We haven't heard of anything off the field with him. So he's a guy that you can come in, bring him in, get some type of production out of him. I'm not going to say he's going to be great, but he's a guy at the third receiver who can give you 30, 40, 50 catches if need be. If somebody goes down, you don't lose very much. He's versatile, can play in the slot as well as outside, and he's a professional. So he can teach those young guys on this team how to be professionals, how to run routes, how to take care of your business on and off the field, and how to learn this offense. So I definitely think it's a good pick up for him. The other guy, Greg Silas, is a guy who went to, I remember him because I believe he went to Hawaii, if I'm not mistaken. Caught a lot of balls out there. He's a big possession type guy, not a lot of speed, but I'm eager to see what they can do with him. There's also seems to be an emphasis on the defensive backfield. There was some talk about us possibly going after Kyle Arrington, but he has since signed a 3-year deal with the Ravens. They brought in Chris Owens, who played with Kansas City last year, 33 tackles, an interception, a couple pass breakups. So he has some experience out there. They're definitely trying to get that third or fourth cornerback spot settled. You know what I mean? We've had some problems there. We got a couple guys in the draft, and now we got Lawson back, and now we got Owens to add to the mix, along with Josh Wilson, who's the guy that we signed. So they put some emphasis on that area. I don't know if they're talented or if it's just numbers they're throwing at it, but we shall see. Go ahead.
No, I think actually they're doing the numbers game because you know you got to bring in some of the people from camp, you know, camp position body players. But, you know, I honestly think our other defensive back is what we picked up in the draft. Our corner from, not Texas. What was his name, Carl? We picked up
Stanford.
He's going to be going back and playing safety for us. Big physical guy, you know what I'm saying? And but he can play that nickelback formation as well right now. He can cover somebody like a Dez Bryant. I keep saying that because that's what Kilton's going to play off, going across the middle. You know what I'm saying? He can line up, press him with his body size, you know, 205 pounds, 6'5", you know what I'm saying? He has that type of shot that fits into him, so he has that frame that can do that. So with this right here, I think we just give some depth, some special team players, and hopefully we can get two more people that can contribute because for some reason, our defensive backs are just the weakest position on our team. They always get hurt. Somebody broke all their toes last year. Somebody always, you know, broke a hamstring. You know, it's always something with the DBs. So hopefully that will just help us out.
I'm going to say it again. I know I might just be drinking the juice here, but I have a lot of respect and I have a lot of love for the 6th round guy, the little guy from Texas. 5'9", 190 pounds. He's a willing hitter. He's the brother of Quentin Jammer, so you know he has some type of experience learning and talking to an NFL-caliber cornerback. Played at Texas, started four years. He was a four-year starter. 11 career interceptions and 37 career breakups. I mean, the guy knows where the ball is. He may not be the fastest guy out there, but he's a playmaker, and he's not afraid to step up and run support, so I like him. A lot too. I think last name is Diggs. So we're gonna see what these young guys can do. I think that defensive backfield is gonna be the key because they're gonna have to definitely cover better this year because the pressure is not gonna be getting there Let's get to the hottest topic in America right now, and I'm sure we're gonna
have a lot of different views on this. Some the same, but some different. The Flategate, the Ted Wells report came out. Basically, his report said basically that he felt that Tom Brady basically was involved with the Flategate. Then we saw the punishment come out. 4 games suspension for Tom Brady. 2 picks, one first round pick in 2016, a fourth round in 2017, $1 million fine for the New England Patriots. First and foremost, man, I kind of know what the answer is, but I'm going to let you put it out there for the people. Do you think the punishment was just? Do you think it was a punishment that absolutely fit the crime? Or do you think that this was kind of a pile-on for a couple of different things, a.k.a. Spygate and a.k.a.
Pumping the sound.
I want to tell you this. I have to, you know, you made the statement. It wasn't on this show, but I have to tell you that New England was not involved with pumping sound into a stadium. When you said it, it was very funny. I thought about it. I'm like, well, who pumps sound into an open-air stadium? And I looked it up. That was the Indianapolis Colts pumping sound into their stadium and the Atlanta Falcons pumping sound in their stadium. So we can't put that on them, Ricky Bobby. But go ahead, sir.
Okay. Well, let's do this here. Let's do this. How many times did they get warned when they were doing Spygate? See, you got to remember, it wasn't just one big time they got caught doing Spygate and that was it. You know what I'm saying? They got the fine. What happened was they were warned a couple of times. You know what I'm saying? In different situations. Not the same team. They were warned. And so what happened was once they finally got caught again with the binoculars and somebody sitting in the stands actually sitting there looking and writing down their formations and calls and plays and everything else, then actions got because they got caught. See, that's the problem with New England. I'm not trying to hate on New England. My thing is they've been getting away from stuff for so long. And you know, like you said, you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But at the same time, damn it, man. You're a successful team. You ain't got to do all this extra cheating. Now, do I feel like the punishment is just? Yes, I do. But the problem is, it's not just against Tom Brady, because Tom Brady, you know, said I heard a couple of reports that were saying that, here's the problem. His ass was so arrogant, like, you know, nah. You know, his demeanor was so, like, this ain't me, to the fact that when they asked him, when they caught him up, you know what I'm saying, it was like, hey, let me see your phone, because they said you were sending text messages to trainers, and you were signing stuff anyway for these trainers, for these people, you know what I'm saying, to the ball boys, whoever. And so he was like, no, I'm not going to relinquish that information. That would have kept him out of suspension right there. That would have ended everything right there, Carl. And he was like, here go my cell phone. No, I didn't do it, whatever, whatever, whatever. Everything would have been smooth. But he had the attitude like, no, we're the Patriots, the owner of our team, and the commissioner are friends. They kick it. Everything is cool. We've been getting away with everything else for so long. We're going to get away with this. And that's what happened. So that's how I feel about that. I mean, the punishment was right on time.
I feel like the punishment was a solid punishment for not the crime, because the crime itself really is not really major at all.
Yeah, wasn't crap. Yeah, the crime wasn't enough.
If they come out with this, if they say they did it, they get fined $25,000 and nothing happened. The problem is that he did say he wasn't involved. And then after saying he wasn't involved, you had the owner, you know, go to the Super Bowl and make a big, you know, to-do about it and say that, you know, you can do your investigation. And once you find, you know, you do it and you find nothing, then I expect an apology. And then you had, you know, no cooperation from, you had no cooperation from Brady. He wanted to see the phone. He said no. There was also no cooperation from the organization who wanted to talk to one of the trainers. For a fourth time, they denied that request. And you know, with all that being said, then yeah, I'm down with you know, the penalties that were given. And you know, I think people get so caught up, but I'm not going to say you are part of this faction, but I know there is a lot of factions out there that, you know, just don't like New England for whatever reason it may be, and want to see New England lose. Where I think this situation is about the integrity of the game, and not just the integrity of the game, because really, what he did to that ball really didn't give them any type of competitive advantage.
Nope,
to be honest with
you, not at all.
He talked. Aaron Rodgers said he puts more. He didn't know anything about the rule. He puts more air in his ball, and you know, because it feels better to him. Jerry Rice said he used to use stick 'em on the ball. So, you know, people have been trying to get advantages. You know, what I'm saying, for a long time, but just got to come clean with it. But with him saying, you know, he didn't do it, with him saying he's not going to cooperate with the investigation, with him and the owner, you know, going ham basically on the, you know, on the commissioner. Yeah, they are friends, but you just can't put me in a bad spot. You know, you need to kind of stand down. With that being said, I think it's just, I don't want to see it reduced, but I think it was kind of put at a higher level because it is because they are going to possibly reduce it. There's been some talk about New England possibly, I'm sorry, Brady putting together a dream team of lawyers to kind of fight this. So I'm eager to kind of see how that goes. But I'm going to tell you, man, more so in the four games, the first and the fourth round pick, more so the first round pick, I mean, is a huge loss. I mean, people don't want to look at that. You know, you had Boy Rose say, you know, forget the picks. And I don't know why he said that. I took it to be that basically, you know, he doesn't value the picks, or he thinks that New England picks so well, it doesn't matter if they don't have a first round pick, which probably could be true. But let's look at this. The first round pick is what Minnesota had been asking for Adrian Peterson. And we know what Adrian Peterson can do. We know the type of career he's had and what he may be able to still do. For someone to say, you know what, I value this first-round pick way more than I value Adrian Peterson right now, should tell you how teams value those picks. So to take that mug away for a deflated ball that pretty much we could have won anyway with, we didn't have one in the Super Bowl and we won, you know, that's a major hit.
Hey, Carl,
the first-round pick is a major hit as well as $1 million. Go ahead.
Okay, well, here's the thing. The deflated ball thing, I don't think it gives a quarterback the advantage, but I was listening, and me being a former running back, and I'm going to throw this out there, I think it gave the running back a better advantage because you got to deflate the ball, you can grip it better. Was it Rodney or Ridley? He didn't fumble in New England, but now he has Cincinnati and fumbling all the damn time? Is that him?
Ridley hasn't played for anybody. He just blew out his knee for New England last year, but all his fumbles were in New England. So that's my point. That's my point. Like, you know, there was somebody who said, well, you know, New England's fumbles are way, way down. And you know, there may be an advantage there, but I've played with Stephen Ridley multiple times in fantasy football. He's my guy. I ought to, that deflated ball, if it did help him, I can't tell because he gave up an awful lot. Who knows? Who's seen a back run for 1,300 yards, 10, 11 touchdowns one year, and the coach is ready to sit him down the next year because he just fumbled so much? So I don't know. Maybe he would have fumbled more. I don't know. But in the real reality of it is, and what one point I want to make before I want to ask you about how this affects the legacy of Brady, is one faction of folks has been really quiet during this whole time, and that is current NFL quarterbacks. You've only heard Aaron Rodgers come out and say, hey, I put more air in it. I think the reason they haven't said anything, I'm not going to say they do the same thing, but they do stuff to the balls. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully it's mostly outside because there's really no rules to the outside of the ball as long as they ain't about to stick them on it, you know what I mean? But everything else, you know, will pretty much go. So I think it's a league-wide thing where teams are doing different things to the balls, legally and illegal possibly, you know, to get them ready. I don't think it was about the competitive edge. I just think it was about them basically lying and not cooperating. And you do have that situation, and they do have, like you said, a history with the Spygate. And with the Spygate, let me say this. It really wasn't that they were warned. What happened was their ex-coach, I can't remember the name, who became the coach of the Jets, he knew that they did this.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that they were being the coach. And he told Belichick, don't do us like that. Belichick did it anyway, so he told. That's what happened with that one. And at that point, they were docked a first-round draft pick. So they've been penalized, you know, the whole way. But they do have a history. I'm not mad at it. It is what it is. To be honest with you, I think this is going to be great motivation for Tom Brady. You know, he's got a lot of stuff going for him. This is the first thing that's going wrong for him in a long time. And I think it's going to be great motivation for him. But his legacy, as it stands, as one of the best ever to do it in this league, does it take a bit of a hit? And if so, how much, in your opinion?
Well, I'm not going to say it takes a big hit just because, like you said, it's Tom Brady. You know what I'm saying? He won two games with, you know, with that he won two MVPs in, you know what I'm saying, that he balled in. I don't think it takes a big hit. But the problem is, every time, the last few times he's won, it's always something that came up with it. You know what I'm saying? The first year he won, it was the Cup. And he really didn't do much. Like, I mean, he did some of that game, but, you know, it was more like, you know, defense was dominant, you know, whatever, the Super Bowl that year. Last time he won it, spy game. This time he won it, ball deflation. And the thing is he's not even associated with Spygate, really. But, I mean, because all he's doing is, you know, it was more of them looking at the offense, really, you know, the defense. So, what I'm saying is just that he's, you know, it's going to be, some people are going to hate, like, yeah, you know, he's a cheater, he's this, he's that. It's not him. It's the organization that, you know what I'm saying, should take the hit. You know, his legacy should be that he won 4 Super Bowls. You know what I'm saying? You can't take nothing away from that man today. You know what I'm saying? He has 4 Super Bowls to his name. So it's not as far as taking a hit. It's the fact that, you know, they're going to be like, okay, well, this happened, that happened. But in the history books, they ain't going to put nothing in there. It's just going to be Tom Brady, Paul Reed, Hall of Famer. That's it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree his legacy in terms of a football player is not going to take a big of a hit. But I had an argument today. You know I'm a Tom Brady guy. I had an argument today with a coworker because he was just like, oh, I can't believe they're giving him 4 games. You know, they should just give him 1 game. You know, they're putting him on par with folks who've done drugs and folks who've done domestic violence. And I got to tell him, I said, you know what, the league is trying to take a stronger stance on those type of things because these are football players and because they do these things, it's brought to light, and it shines a bad light on the game, on the league and the game. But Tom Brady did something that possibly, I don't think it's a great competitive edge. I'm going to say that numerous times. I don't think it gave him any type of competitive edge or great competitive edge or whatever. But he did something that could possibly affect the outcome of the game that went against the integrity of the game. The NFL, in my recollection, I'm sure somewhere down the line there's been some type of situation, but in my recollection has not had that type of issue. We're not talking about the NFL is fixed. We've had that conversation with the NBA because they've had, you know, situations, like you say, with the with the lottery and then the refs and things of that sort. Those situations arise. This is, to me, in my lifetime, been the first situation where someone has really done something to affect the integrity of the game. And then again, it's a big face of the NFL, and it's a guy who says, you know, not only did he possibly do it, he says he didn't do it, but he's not even defended himself. I'm not going to give you my phone.
Not at all.
You know, I'm not – y'all can't talk to this other guy. I mean, it's just a lot of things there that, you know, rubbed me the wrong way. And I'm like, you know, yeah, he deserves – I'm a New England fan. I am a Brady fan. First thing I said, man, they came down hard. But at the same time, he definitely needs – to be punished because they definitely need to send the message. But there are some folks out there who don't care about Tom Brady, don't care about New England. They just want to see New England lose. That brings me to my next situation. Last time they were out without Tom Brady for an extended period of time, they went, I can't remember, 10-6 or 11-5. They did miss the playoff, but they had a winning record with Matt Castle. Last year, they had a very, very, very shaky first 4 or 5 games. And then they went on to the Super Bowl. So, question for you. Number one, it's a two-part question. Number one, can the Pats win without Tom Brady? And right now we're looking at 4 games, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Jacksonville, and Dallas. And how does the rest of the AFC East look right now? Is there a power shift going on? I know you always talking about everybody over there, the Bills, Buffalo Bills all the time, but is it really a power shift? And can they win without him? Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you this. The first part, no, they can't win without him. Because you look at the other two quarterbacks on the roster, one only played, I think, in 3 games, has like 30 or 80 throws, and the other one hasn't even touched the damn field. So without Tom Brady out there, this team is hit. They can try to run and defense all day long, but no, they're hit. Two, there is a power shift. Miami made excellent change. I mean, in the draft, free agents, everything they picked up, Miami got a hell of a lot better. And Buffalo was right there on the cusp of being great as well. They're doing the AFC.
Being great or getting better?
Not being great, being better. Not better with putting being better. I feel like this. There's a power shift, and it's not really a change of power. What it is a change in overall equal talent. within that division now. You know what I'm saying? That division has gotten so much better. You know what I'm saying? Even the Jets made a couple of moves, but I'm not about to, you know, be a supporter of that. But like I said, the team, that division, it's a hard division now. It's just like how, you know, how the, what was the NFC West was a laughing stock, and then it became a powerhouse. So, you know, that's the same thing that's happened now. The AFC was, okay, the New England is going to win it, the West is going to win it, and now it's becoming a powerhouse.
Well, I don't know about a powerhouse. It definitely improved. I think the improvements that Miami made, like you said, had a great draft, brought in Sue. They've done some things to really, really get better over there. They brought in a couple wide receivers over there to help out their young quarterback. They're going to be a better team. Buffalo has strong defense. They brought some pieces over there, Shady McCoy. There's some other pieces over there to kind of help them out. I still don't know what their quarterback situation is going to be. The Jets, to me, have had one of the best off seasons, getting two corners over there, getting another offensive lineman, and having a strong draft. It's really going to come down to what Ryan Fitzpatrick and Geno Swift can do at the quarterback spot. But I'm going to tell you, as much as I like those guys and those moves that they've made, to me, really, Buffalo and Miami have gotten a lot better. So has the Jets. But to me, when I look at the division, we've got this situation with Brady, but we also got a situation with New England where they lost Browner at one corner. They lost Revis at the other corner. Kyle Arrington is no longer there, so they have to revamp their whole cornerback position. Vince Wilfork is no longer there, so they have to find another note there. But they did do a decent job drafting, but I think there's some questions in terms of talent and some questions in terms of leadership on that team and where it's going to come from. In terms of them winning those first couple games, I think Garoppolo, played a couple games last year, is a work in progress. With that said, Matt Castle, when he played, hadn't played a single down in the NFL before he took over that team. And you got to remember that Tom Brady blew out his knee in the very first game, so this guy only had a week to prepare. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to have a whole offseason to acclimate himself, all the training camps, to acclimate himself with all the team and all the weapons, all the offense. I think they're going to have some tough times in those first four games, but I don't see them not winning a game. So that Jacksonville game is a game that they possibly can win. And I think they're going to beat either Buffalo. I don't think they're going to beat Pittsburgh.
I don't think they're going to beat Dallas.
I know you don't think they're going to beat Buffalo, but I think they're going to come out of there at least 1-3 or 2-2. 1-3 at worst.
They might be two and two. But I'm telling you like this. I don't think they're going to beat Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's got that much better. Buffalo, like you said, quarterback play is the only question on that team, which is a big question. I can hold you up. But at the same time, if they just have to have a consistent, you know, ground and pound game, a little bit of pop passes here and there, I think that's all they need to beat them. But their defense is going to, you know what I'm saying, pressure the quarterback. And like I said, it's not Brady. I know he's going to acclimate to the game, but he's not about to be cool, calm, and collective back there. I say that he's going to get blitzed a lot in the Pittsburgh game, blitzed a lot in that Buffalo game, they have some turnovers, and then I think those two might win. Now, the wild card here, they might be able to beat Jacksonville. Yes, I see them beating. You know, Jacksonville did a lot of changes to upgrade their offense and defense throughout the draft. Dallas might be another team I pop them. So they might be 1-3 coming out of this. And then after they come out of 1-3, they play against the Colts. So they could be 1-4 because of this. The next game,
they're 1-3. I'm going to tell you. I'm almost. I have
to get the Colts.
I have to see them play, but I'm going to tell you right now, they play them week six, so there's a week between that game. Tom Brady may throw for 6 touchdowns against Indianapolis Colts.
I doubt it, man.
I believe that he is going to.
The Colts defense got that much better. The Colts is a good
I don't see it. I don't see it. It's the same team. I said they need to get better defensively, and they drafted a wide receiver in the first round, a lot of wide receiving guys, a lot of other hoops, so. Those guys don't play defense, and I'm going to tell you, man, Tom is going to be motivated to really, really turn up. This is the team that turned him in, turned about the ball, said something about the ball. He already beat him 45-7 just a few months ago, so I don't think they have gotten 38 points better. New England may have gotten worse, but I don't think they got 38 points better. And I'm telling you, man. Tom is going to throw for 300 and something and probably multiple touchdowns, maybe 3 or 4 against Indianapolis that day and come back. Now, my last point, We're getting closer. Fantasy football time. Tom Brady last year, he started off kind of slow, but ended up hot. He missed the first four games. I'm sorry. He didn't miss. He played the first four games, but was terrible. And then for the last, from game five on, he put up three less fantasy points than Andrew Luck last year. So, with this being said, he was the number eight, finished number eight in standard scoring last year in fantasy football. Where would you currently rate him, and would you draft him, or would you mess with him in fantasy football?
Yeah. You're still Tom Brady. One of the top five quarterbacks in fantasy football. The thing is, it depends on who you draft against. If you draft against a bunch of dummies, you know what I'm saying? That's gonna, I'm gonna pass on. Think about fourth, fifth round.
Well, he is going to miss a whole lot. He's
going to miss the first four games. Right. Well, let me tell you this, though.
It's his
Gordon.
Week five is his
bye. Gordon is the receiver that was for the Browns. He was suspended for the first three games. And I got it. You know, it was in the later rounds I got him. But it was feast of famine. And I ate good with him, Josh Gordon. You know what I'm saying? That's my thing is, I don't care if it's suspended for four games. You still pick the ass up. He's still a top five quarterback. You know what I'm saying? You might pick up your backup quarterback, you know what I'm saying, in a later round, you know, somebody that can, you know, that can just plug and play for the first four or five weeks for you. And then you talking about you can win a championship series because you say you think he's coming back and throwing for like damn near six touchdowns against the Colts. That right there is enough, you know, to do the same for you. Because you're going to have a lot to prove. So now you're looking at, okay, if you can go 2-3 or 3-2 in your fantasy, put my man in and finish everything off. You straight. No, not at all.
Let's do a little bit of a name game here. I got a list of quarterbacks. ESPN released some of their early rankings. He's 10th on this list. A couple guys I would have him in front of. But with the four-game suspension as it currently stands, I'm guessing that you won't take him over Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, or Peyton Manning. I'm guessing you won't take him over Russell Wilson. Would you take him over Drew Brees?
No.
Would you take him over Matt Ryan?
Ooh, Matt Ryan's got another receiver over there. No, Matt Ryan's still a top quarterback to me.
Would you take him over? Now listen. Now you said the boy's top five. Now I've named six guys. You wouldn't take him over. That's so 1, 2, 3, 4. That's six. So he automatically at least seven on your list. Would you take him over Ben Roethlisberger? Would you take him over Tony Romo?
Yes.
Would you take him over Cam Newton?
Ooh. No. Cam Newton's a runner and a passer, and they picked up another receiver, and it's some help with the running game. Cam Newton's a dual-threat quarterback that gets you points, though. This is Cam Newton style. That's the only way I can put it.
Would you take him over Ryan Tannehill?
Oh, yeah.
Would you take him over Phillip Rivers?
San Diego? I'm trying to think what they did in offseason. They picked up a running back, receiving core, is still shaky. I would say no, but Phillip Rivers would be my backup to get me to that 5 week, you know what I'm saying, that 5 week just to get me to him.
Okay. So you would look at him being your September starter and then Brady.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. I mean, I don't know. It's very early. I don't know what round you would draft these guys in. How early would you take Tom Brady? You sound like you have him about your somewhere between your 8th and 10th quarterback overall. He's going to be sitting out four games, so I definitely think he's going to drop a little bit. How early would you take?
In a 16-round draft, if he's there 8th round, I'll say get him. You know what I'm saying? Because you want to get you two running backs, a couple of receivers, a quarterback, a tight end, and then you coming back to get your third player, then you get him. You see what I'm saying? So you want to make sure you solidify your two starters, your two running backs, you know what I'm saying, a good tight end, you know, say your top two in each position, and then come back and, you know, boom, get your quarterback in.
Okay, sounds, man. Sounds like a sound strategy there. To your point, you asked me those same guys. I'm not taking them over Aaron Rodgers. I'm not taking them over Andrew Luck. I'm not taking them over Russell Wilson. I'm not taking them over Peyton Manning. I'm not taking them over Drew Roethlisberger. I'm not taking them over Matt Ryan. I'm not taking them over Romo. That's where about I cut it off at.
Okay.
He is going to drop some because of the four games. Five games because his bye is week four. So the first
right.
4 weeks is his bye, and then he has to sit out week five because it's a four-game suspension. So he's actually going to miss 5 weeks. That extra his bye being early is going to actually hurt him because that's not a game that he has to. I mean, that's not a game. So he's actually going to miss 5 weeks, which is pretty much almost half or two, about a third of the season because week 14, 13 is when the playoffs start. So 13, 14, and 15 are when the playoffs go. So it's like a third of the season, man. So I think he's definitely going to drop. And then you got folks going to say, oh, he's going to be rusty. We don't know who he's going to be throwing to over there. We don't know kind of how the team is going to look. So I think what you said is pretty relevant. I think last year he went probably somewhere between the sixth to eighth round. I think anywhere eighth, ninth, possibly tenth round would be good value for Tom Brady. Get you a guy who can start, like you said, a Phillip Rivers type guy or maybe even one of these higher guys. I mean, if you go early with the quarterback, which some of us like to do and some don't, you go early with a quarterback and get him, like you said, in that seventh and eighth round situation, and he's your backup, I mean, you're really, really dealing with you're cooking with grease because now you've got a solid backup if something happens to your guy or possibly some trade bait. So there's definitely some value to him there. Some of his pieces, though, since he's not going to be playing, let's talk about Gronkowski, who's routinely been talked about as basically a wide receiver playing the tight end position. We saw some folks draft him in the first round. Some folks draft him in the second round last year in the fantasy draft. Where does his value kind of go with Brady being out five games?
I mean, it depletes a little bit, but not that much. With Brady being out, with a quarterback coming in, the best thing to a quarterback outside of a running game is a tight end. You know, I'm saying he's reliable, crisp runner, gets open, throws a jump ball, intermediate route, something quick to introduce his quarterback and get him going. So I think, really, even though they spread him around a lot as well, he doesn't play a traditional, like, wide position out there in the field. I think that he's going to be targeted often because they need to have some type of security blanket with a backup quarterback or a new quarterback that's not really, you know, he's going to learn the system, but he's going to have more reliable, you know, just hitting ground coffee. So I think his value is going to go up, you know what I'm saying, honestly, which is, you know what I'm saying, because they're going to go to him early and often to make sure the quarterback stays comfortable. The rest of the players outside of that, the running game is going to be the next thing that's going to be impressive because I see them trying to just not put too much on this quarterback, even though he's going to learn. This is the NFL. But at the same breath, you know, you can't overwhelm this guy.
Okay. Well, we're coming to the end of the show, man. We got about a minute left. Just want to thank you guys for tuning in today. Remember that, you know, we come to you. Actually, we're going to be starting, I guess, on Wednesdays for the time being. At 8 o'clock gives us time to kind of settle in and get ready for a little research for the show and give you guys, you know, some of the best that we have. So check us out Wednesdays. Remember, smalltalkradio.com/BIG-C-313. Always check us out. I'm hungry right now. I haven't eaten you all. I need me some collard greens. So I'm going to go out to collard greens by Schoolboy and remember, folks, if you don't have a passion for anything else, man, please have a passion for life and a passion for sports. L Diggity Dog, wonderful show. We'll get back at it next week, baby. Holla.
Hi, bro.
Yeah.
level. Watch this, no tick. Yeah, I'm the nigga gang rap. X-Men, mo shots I deliver. Fade it, fade it. My sponsor, the killer. Shake it, break it. Hot, hot for the winner. Drop it, cop it. Eyes locked on your inner object. Rock it, blast, blast. New beginnings, lovely. Pinky, how not I remember Fiend. Break the freckles off your face. Frenchy freaking swapping tongues. Click my link and stretch your buns. Lose it, then don't make it numb. Blow it, baby, no Saddam. Icky, 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 fucking in the car service, thank you for the carpool. Grandma's on thoughtful. Probably off a narco and gas, not the arco. Popping since the intro. You shopping from the window. Play my favorite tempo.
Favorite song. Translation, ven aquí mami, así culo. Tu quiero que mi huevo si papi moreste. Pero chupaste puto pendejo, el pinche cabrón. Let's get it nice like this, I'm a knight like this. Sword in my hand, I fight like this. And I'm more than a man, I'm a god. Bitch touche on guard. Two-pay trap and a two-tits pop out of that tank top and bra. And when I say do, 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 bitch that BK dog.
She wants some more of this, I give her more of this. I owe her this, in fact I know she missed the way I floored this. I'm focused, I know my Houston partners drop a four on this. I'm focused, I'm slowing down, down.
All right, let me blow this bitch, I'm famous, I blame this on you. Cash in the Ferrari, hang, get my penthouse roof. Skyline the clearest, watch it, your optics. Popping out, you look the weirdest. Pop my top on the 105, head with no power steering. Ah,
oh, oh, luxury. Chitty ching ching, could buy anything, cop that. Oh, oh, collard greens. 3 degrees low, make it hot for me, drop that. Oh, 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 damn, yeah, shit, can shit, stop this. Yeah, yeah, with the shit, hey. Oh, 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 damn, with the shit, yeah. Lift that, this, yeah, down with the shit.
Bummy nigga famous, straight from the bottom, broke niggas hate it. They'll never rob them guns. Function on fire, burn the room, fuck this month of sight, what is calling? Go crazy like no other weed, steady blowing. Pass the blood to my mama, runs in the family. But fuck, keep a nigga fiending. Faded, 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 ride. Shot glass, super size, she gon' get some dick tonight. Meet me at the W and know it's not the west side. Stick it up your south side. Baller, futuristic, groovy gangster with an attitude. What these niggas make a year, I spend that on my daughter's shoes. Smoking weed and drinking, know the college students loving you. We gon' turn it out into the neighbors wanna party too.
Luxury, chitty ching ching, could buy anything, cop that. Oh, oh.